Optimism and hope are two different things. Optimism is the belief that somehow things will be better. Hope is the belief that together we can make things better. Optimism is passive. Hope is active. It doesn't take courage to be optimistic, but it takes a lot of courage to be hopeful.
Welcome back to What Gives, the Jewish Philanthropy Podcast. From the Jewish Founders Network, I'm your host, Andres Bocconi. After the unthinkable events of October 7 and the subsequent crisis in Israel, we made a decision to suspend the podcast so that we could better focus on Israel's recovery. Now, we are resuming our work on What Gives, sharing with you expert knowledge in the field of Jewish philanthropy. We felt it appropriate to transition back into the show by sharing some of the powerful messages presented at the 2024 JFN International Conference, which we held recently in Israel. Beginning with my keynote address at the opening night of the conference, I look to address our collective grief and to challenge us to look towards the future with hope and determination. This podcast will continue to explore the evolving landscape of Jewish philanthropy, now unavoidably shaped by the new and enduring challenges we face as a global Jewish community. So let's begin. I hope this mini-series from the JFN conference resonates with all of us in these trying times. So take a listen.
Why do we do a minute of silence? Where the custom comes from? Probably because there's a level of grief that words can't describe. The Bible, for example, had to invent a special word to describe the unbearable pain of losing a child. Shchol. But even that word cannot describe the abyss of pain, the promises that will never be fulfilled, the hopes that will never be realized, the memories that will never be created, the emptiness of what could have been and will never be. And using silence is better than using the English phrase, may them rest in peace, which is absurd. You see, the average age of the victims of October 7 was 30. The majority were between 18 and 25. They were full of life, full of plans, full of future, full of love. The last thing they wanted was to rest. Sigal's, our Israel director's nephew, Yiftach Yavetz, was 23. He fell defending Nahal Oz, saving it from even a bigger tragedy. He was about to finish the army, tour the world. He was a tennis player, a poet. The last thing he wanted was to rest. Danielle Waldman has spent the night dancing and singing at Nova. She was 24. She was about to get married. She did not want to rest. Jamal Abbas, he was 23. An Arab proudly serving in the IDF, the pride of his family, the example for his unit. He did not want to rest. And our friend, Vivian Silver, she was 74. But she didn't want to rest either because she was tirelessly fighting for peace. Now, rest in peace is really not adequate, and that's why Jews rarely use it. In Judaism, when God forbid a person dies, we say, Te'en neshmatot tzrora betzror ha'chaim. May their souls be bound up in the eternal bond of life. And that is both a plea to God, but above all, an obligation for the living. Because it falls on us to make sure that the dead do not rest. It behooves us to keep them bound up in the bond of life. And that is how Judaism always responded to tragedy, by affirming life. And how do we do that? How do we consecrate life amidst so much death, amidst what you just saw outside in the square? So we do it the Jewish way, the Zionist way, by coming out of tragedy stronger, better, and more alive than ever. Israel is a country that after every tragedy fulfilled the mitzvah ubacharta b'chaim, to choose life. Zionism is about choosing life. But it's about something else. It's about transforming the Jewish people from victims to victors. Not victors only in the military sense, but in the existential sense. Keeping our spirit, our values, our love of life. This is what this country is. Victims to victors. From people to whom history happens, to people that make their own history. From casualties of fate to masters of our own story. Victims to victors. You see, nowadays we live in a global competition of victimhood. But Zionism understood that victimhood is corrupting, is dehumanizing. A victim is an object, not a subject. A victim is a done to, not a doer. The victim culture perpetuates the condition of victimhood. And that's why we Jews always rejected it. You see, we cannot always choose what happens to us, but we can always choose how to react. We are never defined by events, but by our own actions. In Jewish history, every generation has had a moment in which they have to decide whether they will be victims or victors, a challenge that defined them and determined how history would judge them. Two generations ago, as Stephen said, it was the creation of a state of Israel. A generation ago was the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War. For us, this is it. This is our 1948 moment. And it is like 1948 in many ways. On the one hand, it's an existential challenge, like the one we had back then. But on the other hand, as Liora said, it's a foundational moment. It's not a moment to bounce back. It's a moment to refound our country and our people. Jews have survived catastrophe after catastrophe in a way unparalleled by any other culture. In every case, we did more than survive, way more. We came out with a new and great wave of creativity. And this is what is needed now. It is no secret that Israel was on a path that could have led to internal dissolution before October 7. And that's why the unity, the unwavering patriotism that we so surprised at. But it shouldn't have. Because crises don't change people. Crises reveal who people really are. Our natural inclination is not to be mean and selfish in a crisis. Our natural inclination is to trust our neighbors, to love them, to think less in terms of me and more in terms of we. In a catastrophe, we don't change. We revert to our natural state. And our natural state, beneath the layers of selfish conditioning that we've undergone, is one of cooperation, trust, and solidarity. And our role, as founders, as Jews, as Israelis, is to hold on to that feeling of discovering who we truly are as a people, which is who we always were. To abhor what happened to us, but to relish who we have become. Our task is to capture what emerged from the emergency. In the emergency, the best of us rose from the dead, and we must hold on to that as we rebuild. This crisis is a terrible time, but it's also an unfrozen time, one in which the impossible becomes realistic, an invitation to transcend, to think big, to create something new and better. Only that will honor the memory of those who have lost. Only that will keep them bound up in the eternal bond of life. This doesn't mean that we are naively optimistic, but we must be hopeful. See, optimism and hope are two different things. Optimism is the belief that somehow things will be better. Hope is the belief that together we can make things better. Optimism is passive. Hope is active. It doesn't take courage to be optimistic, but it takes a lot of courage to be hopeful. In Jewish history, it was not that Jews kept hope alive, it's that hope kept the Jewish people alive. And to have hope, one needs a vision. to traverse the desert, to cross the desert, you need a picture of the promised land. So in this moment, we need to be bold and we need to have daring dreams of what we can achieve together. In Hebrew, the word for dream, chalom, is the same root of the word leachlim, to heal. To heal, we need to have dreams, both as individuals and as people. That's why we come out of tragedy, by dreaming, by having positive visions of the future. As Viktor Frankl said, those who have a why to live can bear almost anyhow. In some ways, suffering stops being suffering when it has a meaning and a purpose. During the next 3 days, we're going to be talking a lot about the bravery and the courage of regular Israelis, but we're also going to be talking a lot about what we can do as funders in this moment. What is our role in this unprecedented crisis we're confronting? Tomorrow, we'll be talking a lot about specific things, issues to fund, things to support, but today, I want to give you 5 general thoughts that are attitudes that I think funders should have in this particular time. 1, now is the time to give boldly. Unprecedented times requires unprecedented generosity. This is the rainy day we've been saving for. Yes, we have more needs. The needs in Israel are enormous. We have huge needs in fighting anti-Semitism in the diaspora. And we need to keep investing in Jewish education and Jewish identity, because if not, we're doing the anti-Semites' works for them. We cannot cannibalize our existing grantees to fund new ones. We need to give above and beyond. But think about this. In 1948, the Jewish world was smaller, poorer, and coming out of the Holocaust, and yet they managed to create Israel, to absorb hundreds of thousands of Holocaust survivors and refugees, and to build a network of world-class Jewish institutions around the world. It could be done then, certainly can be done now. 2, now is the time to focus inwards. We Jews rightfully pride ourselves in being universalists. We care about all humanity. But during this crisis, we saw that when push comes to shove, sadly, we are alone. Now, I'm not dismissing the historical support of the US and the UK. Every Jew in the world should be eternally grateful for that. But I'm talking about the organizations we fund, the societies in which we live, the universities we funded, the people we supported, the museums, most of them left us out to dry or worse. 80% of Jewish giving goes to secular causes. And that's great. But let's not forget that there are 15 million Jews among the world's 8 billion people. And nobody who isn't Jewish, except a few exceptions, is rushing to donate to Jews or Israel. I'm a strong believer in building bridges, especially now. But solidarity works in concentric circles. Without caring for your own, you cannot care for others. In this crisis, we discovered that even for our allies, even for people that we supported, above our own, Jews are always on probation. And that is painful, but in a certain way, it's salutary. The band-aid was pulled off, and now we know where we stand. So now is the time to live by the first part of that Hillel saying, if I'm not for myself, who will be? And to be clear, every citizen of Israel, Arab or Jew, is part of us. 3, dream. Now is the time to dream big. We said before that dreaming is healing, so funders need to dream, but above all, funders are the ones that can make the dream of others come true. Now is the time to have bold philanthropic visions, to imagine the impossible, because unprecedented crisis requires unprecedented responses. So let's not talk only about small incremental changes, let's imagine completely new realities. Let's be idealistic, utopians, because there's no limit to what we can achieve together. And let's not be afraid of the enormity of the challenges, because Jews are the people for whom only the impossible is worth doing. 4, collaborate. I know I say this all the time, but now I mean it. Nobody among us has the financial power, the resources, the intelligence to solve the intractable problems that we're facing. We need to pool resources, but above all, we need to pool our brain power, our ingenuity, because our diversity is our biggest asset. It allows us to consider issues from different perspectives, to be more open, less dogmatic, and more daring. If there was a time to put our ego aside, this is it. We need intellectual humility to admit that we don't know what works and work toward finding new solutions together. Humility is not thinking that you are small. It's thinking that other people have also greatness within them. Collaboration also implies funding stuff without ideological blinders. During this crisis, many right-wing funders collaborated with left-wing organizations like Brothers and Sisters in Arms, simply because what they were doing worked. And many on the left funded programs in the Haredi sector or in the religious Zionist sector because they were doing amazing work on the ground. We need more of that. We need to be open to change lanes, to fund new stuff, to realize that funding is not about making a point, but about making a difference. And five, now is the time to lead. There's no secret that there's now a crisis of leadership in Israel and actually around the world. So we can complain, we can lament about it, or we can just take leadership ourselves. The transformational moment in Moses' life in the Bible is when he sees a slave master beating a Hebrew slave. So the Torah tells us, Bayah and Ish, he looked around, he saw there's nobody, so he steps in. For us, like for Moses, the lack of leadership cannot be an excuse. It needs to be an invitation to step in and lead. This is what regular Israelis did when their government failed them on October 7. They took leadership. In times of petty politicking, in times of irresponsible leadership, philanthropists can and must be the adults in the room. In a time of polarization, acrimony, funders can be the voice of moderation and reason. In a time of divisions, funders can take the lead in creating a new social contract for Israel and the Jewish people based on equality, respect, and mutual enrichment. My friend, it's been said a lot that now is the time for unity. We said so much that it's a truism already, but it's not less true because of that. We are bound together, the dead and the living, by unconditional love. We will still fight a lot. As Stephen said, we're Jews. That's what we do. But we need to remember that unconditional love is not uncritical, but it is unbreakable. Since Abraham, our patriarch, being Jewish was about defying the world. Being Jewish always was and always is and always will be an act on defiance, a rebellion against the inhumanity and the cruelty of the world. When Moses complained about us in the desert, saying that we were a stubborn and stiff-necked people, he was actually telling us the secret of our survival. They will try to destroy us time and again. They demonize us. They do everything they can to make us despair. But we are a stubborn and stiff-necked people that never, ever gives up. To our enemies, we say, we will not only defeat you, we will transcend you. Here, in this tiny piece of land that we call our own, in this small country, sanctified by the dreams and hopes of a thousand generations, in this land made holy by the blood of our brothers and sisters who died to give us life, in this soil irrigated by tears of sorrow and joy, in this land of beginnings that never end, we say a single phrase that sanctifies life, that is an affirmation and a prayer. Here, with the voices of millions across times and spaces, with those that preceded us and those who will follow us, here we stand tall and proud, and we shout with our entire being, Am Israel Chai. Thank you.